Welcome back. This is Christina Wise, your host. In this episode, I interview Eric Van Horn. I met Eric through good friend Jeff Hayes, and the moment Eric and I met, we were long lost friends. Eric has a business that helps people, well, get into business. He's a franchise expert, and I mean expert. He started, owned, bought, sold, and exited many franchises in his career, and now his business is a franchise consultant who helps others, through his consulting and programming, make wise choices when it comes to buying, selling, or creating a new franchise. Eric is a model example of the wealthy, wealthy lifestyle. He's hit his freedom number. He has a franchise business that completely runs without him. He enjoys teaching others through his popular franchise podcast. And he lives the good life in the Black Hills of South Dakota on an 80-acre playground of outdoor fun with his wife and three daughters. If you're interested in secrets to smart business, wealth, and passive income, you'll wish to listen in. Please enjoy my conversation with Eric Van Horn. Eric, thank you for being on the Wealthy Wealthy podcast.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Goodness. So it's Eric with a K, right?
That's right. Most people spell it with a C, and half the time people do spell it with a C, and it doesn't bother me because I just got used to it.
Yeah. My name's Christina with a K and two S's. So it's either a C or one S, but a CH or one S. And it doesn't bother me either. Well, I'm super excited to have this conversation today. I got the honor of meeting you through our mutual friend, Jeff Hayes. And when we hang out with Jeff, there's always a really nice bottle of wine attached to it and some late evenings. And so I just remember leaving and thinking, oh my gosh, Eric is just good people. I want to get to know him and get to know your work. So here we go. This is me getting to know you and letting everybody listen in.
I love it. No, that was a fun evening. I'm so glad that you were there. And we did. We just got to hang out. And those are the best settings to get to know people. Like, you really get to know people over a glass of wine and no expectations. And you just get to know who people are.
I love Jeff, too. We call it Hotel Hayes because everybody just spends the night under his roof. And he's like, why get a hotel? Just come out and drink wine late into the evening. Anyway, well, let's get started. First of all, just let everybody listening in. What's your background? Tell a little bit of life story, not just business, but who is Eric Van Horn?
I grew up in a small town in South Dakota. I moved here with my family when I was in first grade, and I basically moved away when I was early 20s. And my dad owned a small construction company, and I grew up in the construction world. And I got 14 years old, working all day, all summer long. And towards the end of my high school, I thought, man, I do not want to be doing this for the rest of my life. So I picked my college based on the fun factor of, could I hike and bike and mountain climb and rock climb and snow ski? And so I went to Montana State for a bit. And that's, I got my education, graduated with a degree in business administration that I really didn't use. Just about went to law school, quit that during registration time, and started up a little lawn company. And I was doing that, working for some older lady and planting flowers, mowing her lawn. And she came out of the house and said, Eric, basically, what do you want to do when you grow up? Because she gave me a glass of water. And I said, I'm going to be a real estate investor, because I was taking real estate courses. And the guy that was going to mentor me was helping me understand the real estate investment side of things. And I said, really? She said, really? I said, yeah. And she said, well, we did that 20 years ago. Well, what do you mean? And she said, we bought a condo down by the beach. I was in Virginia Beach at this time. And she said, we did it, and we did it for tax reasons. And now we don't want it anymore. And we want to sell it. And, you know, I didn't have any money at this time, like zero money. And I said, how much do you want for it? And she said, nothing. We just want someone to take over the mortgage for us. I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. And so, long story short, I call up my parents and I'm like, I know you guys don't really want to go into business with me, but here's the deal. And I showed them the deal structure, and they said, that sounds too good to be true. And I said, I know, but it's not. And my real estate, the investor that was going to help me said, guys, if you don't do this, I'll do it with Eric. So long story short, I ended up getting my first large chunk of money within about less than 90 days out of that. And that's what I used to start my first real business, which is a franchise. And so that's how I got started into the franchising world. And I can go on from there when I bought my first one in my 20s, but that's how I got my start in business.
And why franchise? What was the interest there? Why didn't you just continue being a real estate investor?
I was selling, I was buying houses and selling houses and taking deals that people didn't want, but there's still money to be made. And then I found by accident this franchise, and the founder of it had been successful in another franchise. So I thought, there's somebody there that can mentor me, that's been there, done that. Some of my friends were getting involved with it, so there was a lot of younger people that were involved with it. And so some of it was this community, some of it was I didn't have to figure things out because it was already done for me. And so that was the reason I originally did it.
Yeah, so you're actually the first guest I've ever had on that actually is in the franchise business. And when we look at maybe two types of businesses, let's say business ownership in a way, that one business ownership really is entrepreneurial. I mean, you come up with the idea, might bootstrap it, might raise some funds, however you do it, but it's really your idea. It's your innovation. You invent the business system, and that's one way of going about business. The second is to buy the business in the box where the business system's already built, the offer's already there, the training is usually built in. So it may or may not be a quicker way to become a business owner. But I think a lot of people, when they think business, are only thinking the entrepreneurial side. They might be completely missing the boat that there's a whole other way to invest in becoming a business person, correct?
Yeah, there's a whole nother way out there. And there's even from doing it yourself to even between that and becoming a franchisee, there's licensing models or having a business coach that's been in the industry and is coaching you along the way, or just a coach in general to help you get started in business that's done it before. But I've been since then, that first one, I was in it for 10 years, and then I had a really nice exit. And in that model, even within franchising, Christina, there's different models. One of the best things that I did was I bought a regional development, an area development. So in Austin, Texas, I bought the rights to sell franchises in that market and support franchisees. So I was selling franchises, supporting them, and getting half of the royalty. So I was getting 7% of their top line in turn for doing that. And I ended up selling that back to the corporate office when I had 42 locations around the Austin market. And so then I learned how to coach people and train people and help people and help their businesses grow and help them solve problems. So I exited that. So my first 10 years was with one company. My second 10 years, I've had six different brands over seven different states. And so I really accelerated after I, spent 10 years learning how to do it. And now I'm not only, franchisee with some different brands, but I'm a franchisor in the roofing space. So I'm helping bring in franchisees and train and support them. And my team is. And we're looking at acquiring more franchise brands and helping mom and pops, like you were talking about, just a normal business owner out there that's really entrepreneurial and they've built a really good business and they don't know how to grow and expand it. They either are going to open up additional units or they're going to grow it in some way or scale it in some way. And one of those ways is through the franchising model. And so they can choose to do that. Now, it's not right for most people, but for some founders, it's a great way for them to grow and expand depending on what they want to do. So I'm helping people do that as well.
Just in my business career, being a business owner of many businesses over the years, never, well, I helped a franchise model, but I was never a franchisor and franchisee. I just coached and helped the franchisees start get their businesses set up, kind of similar to you, but with no real franchise experience. Anyways, regardless, is that what I found when I've coached and trained business owners and a lot of startups over the years is where the entrepreneurs, innovators lack is their ability to build systems, like the systems, the SOPs. And really what a real business is, it's a business system. And we as owners own the system or the business, and maybe we're employed by the business and business operators, we operate the business system. So that tends to be a big, what I found, like just a big point of contention or place where the business owners never quite get it together. So they're just out selling and selling and selling and making offers and fulfilling offers without any real systems. So that would be a real benefit of a franchise. Is that mostly what a franchise is? It's a business system. So the business in the box is already built, and then you bring your unique abilities, your talents, your entrepreneurial mindset, your kind of risk tolerance, whatever that is to the equation.
That really is it at the end of the day. And a lot of franchisors, when you're going through the sales process, they're going to tell you, like, they have proprietary this, or, you know, this is the secret and whatever. And some of them do have some of that. Some of them have some, a unique patent or a unique selling proposition of some sort. But at the end of the day, that's not going to make you a great business owner. And I think the best franchisors have the best systems. I think they have mindsets at the franchisor level of not trying to make more money at the franchisor level, but how do I help my franchisees make more money? They have a mindset of what can I do at scale as a franchisor that my franchisees don't have to do individually themselves. So the franchisees can focus on the things that they need to focus on, and the franchisor provides them the systems and the processes to do all of the stuff that they should be doing effectively. And not only that, but the franchisor should be learning from all of the franchisees on best practices. So it's not just the franchisor giving the best systems and processes. They start out with that, but then they learn what's working, what's shifting, how they're pivoting, and then they bring that and expand that system wide as well. So the best franchisors listen to their franchisees and help the entire base get better through systems and processes. But yeah, that's it. I mean, at the end of the day, that combined with some grit and some of, you know, people's unique skills, that's what makes the great franchisees the great ones.
I was thinking of, like, you know, we're in this COVID time, maybe incomes have gone down, or maybe business as usual is taking a dive and kind of grind, tired of the grind, or whatever the case is, wherever anybody might be, just brand new, looking for new opportunities or looking for something different. What would be the pros and cons of looking at or choosing a franchise model over, I want to go build my own business?
There's nothing but pros. No, I'm kidding. I can't stand it when people selling franchises, it's always the best time to buy a franchise, you know, in the middle of COVID or whatever it is. So I'll give you some stories of some of the people that I'm talking to, and why they're very contrasting people. Some of them come to me and I help people buy franchises. So people come to me and I help franchisors become franchisors. And I help people that want to come out of corporate America, or they own a business now and they want to get into a franchise. I help them find really good franchises to buy. But so someone came to me recently and they owned a lot of Planet Fitnesses. So Planet Fitness is a franchise and it does very, very well. And they were looking to expand into something else. And because they sold that and they wanted something different, but they said, you know what? I'm sitting on a pile of cash. I'm not in a hurry to get into anything. And they were looking at something that was fulfilling to them, something that was really a passion project for them. Money was important, but that wasn't the highest thing for them. And so their stance is, I'm going to wait to see what happens. I'm going to see if we're doing social distancing for 2 months or 12 months or whatever that is, because they're not in a hurry. I've got other people that came from the internet world, our world, you know, people that are helping people online, and they're doing conferences and conventions and masterminds, and that's how they make their money. And they know that has been impacted for who knows how long or how much, but it's been impacted, and they are looking at diversification. So they want deals. They said, Eric, I know there's some fitness franchises that will be struggling, and there will be fitness franchises that struggle through this. Any brick and mortar will have some struggles, just how much. And so they are looking for deals. And they said, I will take a deal, pennies on the dollar, to help somebody exit, and I will hold that, and I'll take the risk of holding that for however long, and then I will sell that to private equity at some point. And that's happening right now. Private equity is buying out, or was buying out, franchisees, large franchisee groups. So that's another one. And then I've had somebody else, then they're in fitness right now, or they're in the beauty space, whether they're franchisees or not. I've been working with both, and they want to get out of brick and mortar into, like, the ugly service-based businesses. Think HVAC, plumbing. I just talked to a plumber that is a franchisee of a plumbing company, and he bought it 2 years ago. And I said, well, how did it go? And he's like, you know, I said, what were your expectations and were they met? He said, I was expecting to do X amount based on what I was thinking that from the franchisor's expectations that were set for me. He's like, we did way better than that. And then I set these expectations for me in 2020 and we're already exceeding that by far. So he's in these service-based needed businesses right now that were never interesting to people. You know, they all wanted fitness and cool things like that. But now these service-based businesses are super interesting to people because they're in need. And I think they're really interesting to people that want to diversify. That is one of the bigger things, or they're coming out of corporate America and they don't want to do the grind and they're okay working with blue collar employees.
It's like, why would one choose not to go franchise versus just let me bootstrap my business or start my own business?
Sometimes people are too entrepreneurial, or they think they're too entrepreneurial. So I'll kind of explain the difference between those two. If you're too entrepreneur, let me back up. I'm an entrepreneur, I like to build things. I like to grow things. I like franchising as the way to do that because I can get into a franchise and they train my employees. They train my team members and they do a lot of it. So I like to be more the investor into the business versus the principal of the business, the person that's the entrepreneur in the business. So from an investor standpoint, I don't care if it's a mom and pop business or a franchise business. So as an investor, I like franchise businesses because it's already figured out, or it should be figured out. But some people are too entrepreneurial. They don't want to be the investor. They want to be the person that is making the decisions. They want to be the head person. They want to be the one that's innovating in the business or can make different pivots in the business as they want to. In a franchise system, you're limited on some of that. So if you want to be the person that's calling the shots like that, franchising is probably not for you. So that's the entrepreneur that wants to get focused on their business and be the main person in that business. Me as an investor, I don't care about that. I want the person leading the business to just make the business successful. And so that is the negative from that standpoint. I'm trying to think the negative of what other negatives are you thinking? Reframe that question for me, because I want to get in.
You mentioned one was a little bit of the limitations, and those that I know own franchises, they're really great operators. They can just operate those systems and work efficiencies and really just nail down those SOPs. And they love the operational aspect. It's being a principal of a really working system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they are the operators of something versus trying to build something, which tends to be a different type of probably entrepreneur, if you will. Another question I would ask are what type of capital requirements are required? Meaning, could that be just the cost of entry might be?
That's all over the board. I think the people that see the value in the systems are going to pay more for that. The cost can be anywhere between, on the low end, $100,000, $150,000 to, you know, we paid more than $1 million a store to open up our Sola Salon Studios. I owned 12 Sola Salon Studios in Orange County, and each one was about $1 million to operate. Now, here's one of the negatives. Could we have done the salon suites without Sola? We absolutely could have. We would have learned some very expensive lessons. And so we were very happy with the franchisor because they told us things that saved us money in the process of the build out. And so they didn't have a proprietary anything, but what they had is experience, and they've lost money before, and they saved us money. I mean, I think one of our first builds, we saved $100,000 because they caught something that we were about ready to do. And they're like, you guys don't want to do that. Make sure you get the landlord to put this language into the lease, so you don't have to, you know, make the same mistake that we made 2 years ago. So it saved us, I think, about six figures in that. So sometimes it's not even just like they're making you more money or the brand or whatever, but there's things that they've learned along the way that can save you money. Now, after being in that system for 2 years, we wish we had never done it because we knew everything now. You know, we knew the playbook. We could have done it ourselves. But then looking back, you know, we wouldn't have been able to get to where we were without that. The other interesting thing on the pro side is we sold to the private equity company that bought the corporate franchisor. So there's unique things that you can do when an exit does come, because there's a built-in buyer with neighboring franchisees or certain private equity. So that's another one of the advantage. I think one of the biggest disadvantages to some of that is just you're being told what to do. You have to follow a system, and the best people at it are system followers. And I'm not the best system follower there is. And that's why I have to put people in place that are good system followers. And so again, if you're going to be the person running the business and you're going to buck the system all the time, you probably shouldn't go franchising. But if you, at the end of the day, I don't want to be the guy doing all that. I want to be the guy that has people doing stuff for me so I can go scale other things. And they have to be system followers. Your employees, at the end of the day, have to be system followers and do what you say. But anyway, those are some advantages and disadvantages. Some more.
If you're looking at options between franchises, some of them have pretty tight restrictions as far as regions or how many, what can be too close to someone. And I've had friends that have bought into a franchise and they were really disillusioned because, or the opposite, that the franchisor sold the same thing, like two blocks away or something. So now they're competing really with almost their own brand and a different owner. So what is your advice for, if you're looking at franchises, different questions or things you would want to consider?
Yeah, that's a good point. Cause that absolutely does happen. And that's the difference between bad franchisors and good franchisors. And so to get to your question, to find out if it's a good franchisor or a bad franchisor, or even just has good systems, you want to ask the franchisees these questions. The franchisor is selling you. You're going to be hearing things from the franchisor that is part of the sales process. And you just need to recognize it for what it is. And it's not always just them selling you, but you need to sell them too. So don't forget that you are selling each other. So with that, just recognize that the franchisor is selling themselves. So you want to buy it, but they're also watching to make sure that you're going to be a good fit for their system. So that make no mistake about that. But then you need to validate what they're selling you. Is there any substance behind it? And the way that you do that is talking to franchisees. In any franchise system, I think there's the third of franchisees that are just, they're horrible. They probably never should have been a franchisee. They're the bottom performers. They're never going to be happy and they just shouldn't be franchisees. Then there's the average performers. That's the middle third. And then there's the top third, the top performers, and they're always going to be top performers. They're probably going to be top performers in any system, whatever they do, they're going to be top performers because that's who they are. So as you are talking to franchisees, it's important to know who you're talking to. So you have a grid to filter their comments. And an example, if you're talking to it's hard to ask them about if you're a top performer or not. They'll probably tell you. So you just need to figure that out. Are they top performers? So you know who you're talking to. And then ask them broad questions. You just can't get into it right away. How much money did you make last week or last month or last year? Because they don't know you from Adam. So you just talk about the franchisor. You should have had a conversation with them about like the key numbers, the KPIs, the things that they measure in the business, whether it's a number of customers, average value of the customer, whatever it is. That's what you start to talk to the franchisees about, to make sure that is all lining up with the expectations that you've been given. And then to dig deeper, ask the franchisees questions, not directed at them, but ask them, hey, what are the top performers, are they kind of doing this? Middle performers doing that, bottom performers this. That way they don't have, it's not an invasive personal question to them. And you'll start to see them start opening up, or you'll see the ones that start to open up where you can dig a little bit deeper into them. But franchisees, Christina, they're the best place to get accurate information. You just need to know who you're talking to though.
You make a good point there. It's just remember that it's a sales process and the pitch is probably going to sound really great. And, in any sales process, it's listening and then just validating, like, okay, let's see if these numbers are real and what they're promising is real and that the performance is measured against those that are actually performing according to those set promises. And yeah, it's just do your homework. What would be some examples of maybe franchises that people wouldn't even know they're franchises, different brands that are maybe out there?
I think there's some unique ones out there, like Sola Salon Studios. Are you familiar with who Sola is or the Salon Suite concept?
No, it's funny you say that because when you said Sola, I'm like, oh, I just saw Sola go up in Austin not too long ago. And I thought it looked really pretty. And I thought, wow, those owners did a good job with that location. So now it's like, oh, that makes more sense in a way, you know?
That's a franchise, and that is because a lot of people think food, right? When you think of a franchise, people go to Subway or Jimmy John's or all of those, or Chick-fil-A, which is really not a franchise, but they go to all of those types of franchises, and that's what they think of franchising most of the time. Now, there's brands out there, and I'll just use Sola as an example, and we can talk a little bit more about that, but the folks that started Sola, they were in the mobile home park business for the longest time. And then one of them had experience in franchising before that. So they had this idea that, why don't we just, have a big building with 7,000 square feet and chop it up into 100 square foot sections that we can lease out to salon professionals. So it's like office suites for salon professionals, estheticians, massage therapists, nail techs, you name it. If you find them in a salon or the beauty world, they can rent us their own spot in Sola. And that business really isn't the beauty business. As an owner, I wasn't in the beauty business. I was in the real estate leasing business, and I was in the business of helping mostly women become successful entrepreneurs, because where the customers were coming from was they were, let's say they were cutting hair. And they were at whatever salon it was. And they had a choice either to keep doing that, working for somebody, or they could go out on their own. And if they were to go out on their own, there before Solar or the Salon Suites, they would have to go find a lease, negotiate that lease, get equipment, paint it, refurbish it, and then sign a long-term, probably 5, maybe 10 year lease on that, 3 years probably at the earliest. And then they were on the hook for all of that. And then Salon Suites came in, and they basically said, for 100 square feet, we will build it out for you. We'll put all the equipment in there for you, and now you own your business, and you are your own business owner now. And it's an easy transition into business ownership for them. So there was a need for that in the salon space, and that's what Sola filled. A lot of people, they would never think of a business like that. And this was now it's a lot more common, but back, 10 years ago when we first started, almost 10 years ago, it was very uncommon back then.
So that's a really good example. Let's use that one of, okay, I cut hair. I was working for another owner, and then I want to go out on my own, and I come across Sola. What would the conversation sound like, look like, and walk me through how much money I would need, and just what some of the terms might look like, and ultimately what maybe I could expect as bottom line.
So this is a real soft sell. Some franchises are hard sells, and at the consumer level, this is a really soft sell because you got to know your customer. And in this space, by the way, just to back up a little bit, one thing that's unique about it, you really need one person working for a handful of these studios. So there's not, we had 12 studios, and I think we had 6 full-time employees. So it was just a great business from that standpoint. But back to your question, someone would come in, and usually there's something that they're running from or running to make them want to transition. And in the beauty space, if you ever talk to your hairstylist, they will validate this without a doubt, but it's a disaster out there. It's the Wild West. They don't like this. It's catty. There's gossip. It's just an absolute disaster. They hate a lot of things about where they are. Eventually, they get to that point in most places, and so they and now they have a book of business because they've been doing it for a while. So they have their own following, and they look at Sola, but the initial call comes in like, you know, I'm interested. And then we call them and we don't ask, and I'm not in the business anymore, so I'm kind of talking like I am. I sold the business at a nice 8-figure exit about a year ago, but the call would come in and we would not ask their name. We would not ask where they work. We would not ask anything about them, because if it ever got back to their, where they were working, I've seen it. They've had that person that made that call, the salon owner, found out their stuff was on the curb, like just done. And so that is common in the beauty space. It's very difficult like that. So we had a treat. We just, like I said, it was a real soft sell. And so eventually they would come in and we would just give them a tour, and we would let the building and it speak for itself. And we would show it to them. They would see it. They would envision themselves in there. And then we'd make it very easy for them to transition. We give them a bunch of product that they could have. We would paint the room for them, so they could just all of a sudden go out of where they were and into the new spot. And then they can now make money off of all the product they sell. And they could, and with all the technology, you know, they're all making their own appointments anyway. So it's just a really easy transition. So they could go from, I think we were charging a few $100s a week, and they're used to paying by the week. So we would charge a few $100s by the week for under month-to-month contracts. So we wanted them to be there. We didn't want to make them stay there. And there were some that were under 1-year contracts, but that's besides the point. They wanted to get to a good place where they could make more money, be happier, create their own schedule, and be a business owner. And that's what we provided for them. And their businesses exploded. And some of them have gone on to start their own salons because that's what they wanted. And I know franchise owners that support that. There's like a celebration when they leave to go do their own thing, because that's the kind of business that you want to be known for. So it gives you a little story there.
I love that. Thank you. And what would be the capital requirement to say, to start? Is there one, or is it just you start paying monthly, or?
And from a franchisee standpoint, that is, it's over, well over $1 million now to open up one.
To open up a franchise. What about to be a salon on? So So you're saying, okay, if I want to open a Sola suite, it's probably going to be $1 million to own that franchise. Gotcha.
Yep.
And then for the salon renter, what are they? That's $1 million.
It's just a couple $100s a month, a week. Yeah. So it's super easy for them to get into it. But then a lot of these other franchises, there's some unique ones out there that I work with now that are in the $500,000 range, but that's a lot of it's equipment, and they're buying equipment. And some people are buying those because of the Section 179 in the tax code, where they can write off a lot of this stuff. And there's unique, and some of these have unique aspects to the business that the barrier to entry is equipment. And so not a lot of people do it. And there's barrier to entry of having certain requirements, or your employees have to be, have certain certificates to be able to work in different things. So some people like those high barrier to entry type businesses, and others in the paint. I mean, there's a lot of franchises that are in the painting space. They paint houses. But you're just given the playbook on that. I don't know. Do you know Cameron Harold? Yeah, so Cameron, he got his start in the painting business, and then went on to 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And I've had Brian Scudamore on my podcast, and you know, it's just amazing how well some of those businesses actually do. But the barriers to entry are really low there. So those ones, you need to have a solid system. And Brian with 1-800-GOT-JUNK has just one of the best places to work. And Cameron was helpful in making that happen, and it's continued to this day. One of the best places to work is 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
And how does it work with the business model? As far as, I mean, I believe the business model then from the franchisor standpoint would be, you collect some capital up front to buy really the rights, and then royalties, and then it'd be royalties paid. So it's capital out from the franchisee, and then royalties paying in for the use of the IP. What's the economics of how these models work?
So from the franchisee standpoint, they're paying an upfront franchise fee, and they're paying monthly royalties. And like in reality, in a service-based business, the franchisee can start having revenue come in right away because they leave training, they pay their franchise fee, they start generating revenue right away as soon as they get home and hit the ground running because they don't need an office. Some of it's home-based, and so that's great for both the franchisee and the franchisor. And let's use like a gym concept or the beauty concept. They pay a franchise fee, and now the franchisor has to do a lot of support. And this is what a lot of franchisees don't see. The franchisor is spending money and time helping that franchisee get open probably 6 to 12 months later. And so they've spent all this upfront time getting them ready and getting them open, and they're not making any money until they do get open. And that's probably 12 months from the time that they sign the franchise agreement. So that's difficult for the franchisor when they're early on. But once that person is opening up their second location or their third or fourth or 12th, they don't need much help from the franchisor. So that's really when the franchisor starts making good money from that franchisee, is once they open up those other ones without a lot of the franchisor resources. The franchisor makes money from the royalties. So those royalties start coming in, and that's a big line item on their P&L. They make money in, let's say there's some suppliers that they were able to buy it. They were able to get a certain product or something at a bulk discount because they have so much. They're going to probably make some margin on some of that, and hopefully they pass on some of that margin to the franchisee. The best models pass on some savings to the franchisee, and the franchisors need to make money. Even like we're in the middle of COVID right now. There are franchisors that are shut down, or franchisees that are shut down. Some of these franchisors have elected to turn off their franchisees' royalties. And I think I'm not involved with that right now, but I would rather pay my royalties. If I have income coming in, I would want to pay my royalties to the franchisor so they could keep staff paid, they can keep supporting me. And I've talked to franchisors that have done both, and the franchisor needs to make money. It needs to be a fair deal for both sides. And part of the agreement is to pay your royalties. And I know one of the best franchisors, and he's like, I'd had a call with him. He's got, I think, 400 to 600 locations of a fitness brand. He's like, Eric, I had to keep, I have not laid off one person through COVID. I've not done that once. And this is, and the I told the franchisees, you need to pay your royalties. And this is what we're going to do for you. And they were just adding more value, helping the franchisees. So franchisors, they make money different ways. And I think as a franchisee, you look at the franchisor and you're like, gosh, they're just making so much money and they're not doing anything for me anymore. But that you want your franchisor to make money so they can support you. Like that, at the end of the day, they need to make money different ways. As long as it doesn't hurt you as a franchisee, let them make money.
Absolutely, absolutely. Is there more or less an average? I know I'm sure it's all over the map, but is there really kind of a rule of thumb, a benchmark, an average of what a typical franchise would make? Maybe if it's like it's 100,000 a year or so, you could make $1 million a year if you owned 10 franchises. Or is there anything like that, or is it just all over the board based on the type of franchise?
Well, let me give you a very non-helpful range. So I mean, you can lose money in any business. You can lose money. So that's the, that's the downside. You can lose money. Talking to people in service-based business today that are making really good money. It's hard to answer that because it's relative and it's dependent on the brand and the industry and how big you are and how many you buy. And then I was talking to somebody else in a large fitness franchisor, and they were and I don't work with this particular one, just so I just make that clear. It's one that I don't work with, but this is just anecdotal information. They have about a dozen locations, and they're going to net about $8 to $9 million out of that. And I don't own this one. I have friends that own it. I don't work with it, but and that's I would say that's a really good franchise. And I know other ones that they say, Eric, the underperformers are making 200 to 250 and the top performers are making 600,000. And again, I don't work with that one either, but that gives you just some type of, you know, going from nothing, like losing money to that kind of money. And there's just different skill sets that go involved with it and different risk and whatnot. And I think that's, you know, I think just in business in general, the risk factor of just being a business owner, especially, you know, all of those brick and mortars right now that are making that kind of money. You hear $9 million off of, you know, 10, 12 locations, and you're like, that's a no-brainer. But they're sitting with, you know, members not coming in right now and rent to pay and guarantees on all of that stuff. So, you know, that's a downside of a lot of this stuff. And I think that's where some people that have expanded very rapidly, whether they're mom and pops or franchises, if you've expanded too rapidly in the last year and you're highly leveraged, you're in a difficult position. So I think there's going to be a lot of interesting acquisitions coming up, you know, just in general with brick and mortar.
So what is your real role now? Are you basically a franchise coach? So if somebody's listening and says, you know, I'm really interested in buying a franchise right now, do they call Eric or what do you recommend?
Yes. Go to franchisesecrets.com. And that's where you can get in touch with me. If you are looking to buy a franchise and you just want some honest feedback, the thing with me is I'm probably one of the most authentic, honest guys out there that I don't believe franchising's for everybody. It's been incredible to me and my family, but I haven't done everything perfectly either. And I've made mistakes and I have some, you know, bruises to show for it, but I probably know more than a lot of people out there. And I'll be very, very straight with you on that. So if you are looking at buying a franchise, whether I work with them or not, I could probably help put you in touch with the right people. And then I'm helping people that have really strong businesses that are non-franchise, but they're thinking, I want to scale that thing and I want to go regional or nationwide. And the dilemma is, do I turn it into a franchise or do I expand it myself or do I just keep what I have? And those are really good questions. And I love to have conversations with people like that. And again, I will probably try to talk people out of franchising that just to give them the real story on what it's like. And you're no longer in your business anymore. You are in the business of helping other people get into your business as a franchisor. But sometimes, Christina, the people that want to expand and grow, they just want a piece of the upside. And one of the things that I do is I'll help brands grow and I'll take the majority equity stake in the franchise company while they keep their original company and they can participate in the upside nationwide expansion with equity, but they don't have to be involved with it from the franchisor side of things. So there's a lot of different options, but anyone that's interested in talking about franchising, Franchise Secrets is probably the best place to reach me. And I'm starting to coach people in a mastermind that are franchisees as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Well, just a few closing questions that I like to complete with so everybody can even get to know you a little bit better and just what a good guy you are. So the first question is, if you said, Christina, this is Eric speaking, Christina, if you really, really knew me, you would know that.
Christina, if you really, really knew me, you would know that I am a family man first. Like my family takes priority over everything for me. I've got my wife and three daughters, younger daughters, and I place them, the family as a priority, marriage as a priority, being a father as a priority. And that's who I am. I'm very authentic. And what you see is what you get, my strengths and my weaknesses. So, I think that's what, if you really got to know me that's probably it. And I'm not perfect with that too. Like that's what I said, like family man first, that's what I strive for. I'm definitely, have not arrived with that yet.
The follow-up question is, give me a brag moment. What's something you're really proud of?
Boy, I'm really not that good at bragging on myself. Maybe that's a brag in itself. That's my brag. I'm good at not bragging on myself. Gosh, that now you stumped me. I don't even know.
Reach in. What's just something that you say, you know, I'm if I'm really honest, I'm really proud of X.
If I'm really honest, I'm proud of, I'm really proud of just, it goes back to my family. And, I'm just proud of my family. I'm proud of my wife. I'm proud of just the culture that we've created in our family. I'm proud of me not caring what people think about me. That's probably it. And that's something that has come over time, because it's, I guess, fear of man, fear of what people think is normal. At least it was for me. And I've gotten to the point where I care less and less of what people think, and I make decisions not based on what people are going to say or people are going to think, but what's best for me and my family.
Wasn't so hard.
No, it wasn't, but I had to dig for
All right, and one final question is, I like to complete with a little myth busting. Is there one big fat lie out there that you believe isn't true that you would like to call out?
The big fat lie. The people on the left aren't right, and the people on the right aren't right. It's like everyone thinks they're right, so right with everything, and then that bothers me. I guess I like to look at things from both sides, and that's not really a myth out there, but yeah, that's probably one of my pet peeves, is this watching people that just don't take the time to look at something from somebody else's perspective. And because they are so interested, they just want to prove their point. And I'm fine with people having points, and I have my beliefs and whatnot. But if you're not looking at things from somebody else's perspective, then you're not really, really growing.
Right on. Well, Eric, thank you so much for your time and all the expertise and genius and experience that you shared with us, and we'll make it really easy for anybody to find you that is intrigued by the franchise idea.
This was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Welcome. If you're inspired by today's show and you're the kind of person who likes to help others, there are some easy ways that you can help me. First, please subscribe to the Wealthy Wealthy podcast. By doing so, it helps both of us. You'll never miss an episode, and it helps me and my ratings. And if you're able to leave a review, hopefully 5 stars, even better. Finally, if you think your friends and family would enjoy the show, I invite you to share the Wealthy Wealthy podcast with everyone you know. If you have any questions, I'm here. You can email me at support@wealthywealthy.com, and I may even use your question or suggestion for a future podcast episode. Also, if you want to be motivated and inspired more regularly, connect with me on Instagram or LinkedIn at Christina Wise. That's KristinaWise. I believe we are all on this journey together towards finding our sovereignty and freedom. And I'd love to be part of your journey. I'd love to help you, and especially on the financial side. So learn more at sovereigntyacademy.com. As always, thank you so much for listening and being part of the Wealthy Wealthy community.